Hello and welcome to Automators, the podcast where we talk about learning all about your tech and getting it to do your bidding for you so you don't have to do anywhere near as much work. I'm Rosemary Orchard and joined as always by David Sparks. Hey David, how are you?
Excellent, excellent. So happy to be here, Rose, and talking automation with you. And today we've got a guest. Welcome to the show, Paul Kafasis.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah. For folks who don't know, Paul is the, I think I would call it the chief mugwump and broom pusher over at Rogue Amoeba, in my opinion, the best audio software company out there in the Apple ecosystem. You guys make a lot of applications, including Audio Hijack, which I'm using at this very moment to record this very show.
Excellent. We always like to hear that. I do the occasional podcast, and it's always good to hear that our software is helping people make these shows.
Yeah, you could put that on the website. The preference of podcasters. So many apps you make are useful for audio production and podcast type work. I also use Fission to edit all my ads for the show because it's just like the perfect mix. You guys make some great stuff, but more importantly, you guys are also in the automation space with some of the apps you do. And Paul, you've been around a long time in this community. And we're looking forward today to talking to you about a little bit about automation from a developer perspective, along with what you do and maybe even a little bit of the news coming out of WWDC this year.
Yeah, absolutely. We've, as you said, we've been around a long time. It's almost 22 years now, and we've seen some changes in terms of how automation works on Apple's platforms and tried to adapt to those.
You know, Paul, one thing I've never had a chance to ask you is, how is it that you got into this audio specialty? Like, what was it that led you down the road to learn so much about the Mac audio systems?
Well, it's a good question. There's not a single answer like, you know, oh, we decided we wanted to make audio software and that's what we were going to do. The three co-founders, myself, Quentin, and Alex, had all worked on various MP3 players for the Mac, software MP3 players back in the late 90s and early 2000s before iTunes. And so we had sort of just a hobbyist audio background, and Alex had some more experience with DSP and audio software in general. So we had a little bit of background there, and that's sort of what led to our first product, which was the very first version of Audio Hijack. There was an opening there where people needed to record audio from other sources on their Mac besides just a microphone, and there wasn't a way to do it. So we created a way to do that, and everything really just grew from there, where I'd have to really think about the exact order of the products, but it was all customers coming to us and saying, as you just mentioned, Fission, that's our audio editor. People said, oh, I recorded something with Audio Hijack. Now I need to edit it. What should I use? And initially we said, oh, you know, here's several other editors, try those. And eventually we said, well, this is silly. This is clearly something that our users can use, a huge percentage of our existing users can use.
Yeah.
And so we said, all right, let's make an audio editor. And we made Fission, and we had the ability to capture any audio. And so in the mid-2000s, when Apple had the Airport Express, people said, oh, I want to stream audio to the Airport Express, and what eventually became AirTunes and AirPlay on dozens, hundreds of devices. And we said, all right, well, we have half of that equation. We have the audio capture part, so you can take audio from your web browser or Spotify or whatever audio source. Now we need the half that sends audio out to those devices. But again, it was just customers coming to us and saying, oh, you know, you're doing X and I want to do Y that is pretty related. Can you implement that in Audio Hijack? Which sometimes we did, but sometimes we said, that's a very different product. That should be something totally separate. And that eventually grew to where we have seven different audio products right now. And it was not ever something where we said, let's make a whole audio lineup, but it's something that developed over time.
I mean, so often successful careers, whether, you know, professional or software, whatever, is leveraged expertise. You know, you get good at something and then you're able to leverage that. You know, like you took Audio Hijack, you leverage that into Fission and you leverage that into more. And you guys really know the audio systems inside out. But it's always funny because so often it is the case that first bit of expertise is kind of random. You know, it's like, you just like you had a unique problem, like, well, let me figure this out. And then suddenly everything you learned to figure that out made you good at the next thing. And before you know it, you're the best audio company on the Mac.
Well, we appreciate that. I don't know if that's true or not, but I certainly appreciate hearing it. And as you said, it's very much leveraging what we knew and growing from there. And then there, the other thing is that there was sort of, you know, we're talking about a two-decade span here. There was definitely an explosion in terms of audio on the Mac, audio on computers in general.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the iPod was almost, I guess it was about a year old when the very first iPod was about a year old when we got started. And so that was, you know, just starting to become something big. And over the next few years, that got really big. And then podcasts became a thing in the mid-2000s, but have just exploded in the past 5 to 10 years. So it's something where we, I always tell people there's a whole lot of good luck and good fortune in all of this. But as you said, it was starting with one little thing, starting with Audio Hijack and saying, okay, where do we go from here? And early on, we had ideas, you know, you use a computer, you have all sorts of ideas for all sorts of things, games and utilities that are totally unrelated to audio. But to this point, we have only had audio tools, and then we had a couple free apps that were just sort of scratching an itch for ourselves, but it was never anything that we sold. I don't want to say for certain that we'll never make a non-audio product, because I want to leave us at least the option, but it has definitely served us well to focus on that expertise, like you said.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah. And another thing you guys have done, and the reason you're here today, is that you guys have been looking at automation and doing various forms of it in your applications for a long time. And I want to talk about a few of my favorites and some of the automation tools that you guys have built, but I'd like to start a little more meta in terms of just, you know, automation as a developer. How do you think about automation and, you know, decide when and when not to bring it into your applications?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. Rose said something right up top about the show itself being about, you know, making your computer do more of your work for you. And that's certainly the promise and the power of automation. But it's not on the developer side, there's a whole lot of work that goes into making that possible. And so we have to decide, you know, what is worth making, when is it worth making something automatable? Is it an action that is going to be taken a lot? Is it an action that enough users will find value in having automation surrounding it? And anytime we look at something, the first thing we do when we're looking at a problem is we want to solve the problem manually, so that, you know, you click this button and audio gets recorded, or you click a few buttons and you've set a timer so that something gets recorded in the future. Those are sort of two aspects of the same problem. But that second one, the timer, is a little bit of automation. And that's something where timers came after the initial idea of just, here, click this button and audio gets recorded. Click the button again and it stops. Then people said, all right, well, that's great. And that's working really well. But now I know something's coming on in 3 hours and I'm going to be out of the house. How do I set it up to do it for me automatically? So it really is something where we have to sort of think about what problems are we going to solve broadly, and then what of those problems can we make possible to automate? And it's something that I talked about with my co-founder Quentin recently when we were, you know, when I was talking about this show, was that there's a good amount of cost on the developer side, just expense in terms of implementing this stuff and then also maintaining this stuff. Because if we make something possible to automate, we know that users are going to come to rely on it, and we don't want to yank that out from under them. We don't want to change things for them. So we want it to keep working and keep functioning the way that they expect. If someone makes a setup where, hey, this works automatically and you know, it does exactly what I need it to, if we realize that we need to change something, we have to be very careful about that. And if we and in general, we need to be careful not to change things unless they absolutely have to, so that people's setups don't break. So it's definitely something where, you know, if I could snap my fingers, everything would be automatable and, you know, it would all just, you know, sort of the dream of AI, just tell the app to do what you want and it'll take care of it for you. But it's not the way that it works when you're actually designing the software.
It's surprisingly easy to, you know, accidentally program yourself into a corner as a developer where you set up a series of things and, you know, it's the domino effect where all of these things work together like this. And then if something has to change on one of those earlier dominoes, you know, that first one falls down and then domino number three and so on just don't get called anymore. So being unable to have your automations continue to run would definitely be a problem for the users. But I can see that also just being something that you wouldn't ever want to have happened to your users, because, you know, we do all rely on Audio Hijack. And one of the things I love is I click record and it records. It always records. And that, so, you know, having, yeah, and having your things work is pretty critical to everybody's workflows. So I do appreciate the fact that you're not willing to just, you know, throw something out there without any thought in advance as to whether or not you can maintain it and continue to deliver it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we want to be circumspect about what we implement, because we know that these are production tools for a lot of people. I think early on, you know, we talked about the beginnings of the company. Very early on, we would hear from users, and 2 days later, we might have implemented something that they suggested. And you know, it was great. It was great fun. It was great for the user. They got something very quickly. But as the user base grows to, you know, tens or even hundreds of thousands of people, it's pretty dangerous to be making changes willy-nilly like that. So we need to be a lot more careful about the changes we make, just period. And then especially as relates to automation, because I think in the case of automation, it's something that you can't necessarily see as easily if you've broken something, because, you know, again, going back to the very obvious example, you click the record button, audio comes in, it gets recorded. That's an easy thing to test. But if you have some automation that relies on some dark corner of the app that we made automatable, but, you know, haven't touched in months, and somehow we broke that, it'll be a lot harder for us to realize that until it gets to your machine and suddenly your setup doesn't work. And obviously that's something we very much want to avoid. So we're, as I said, circumspect about what we implement and careful about any changes that we need to make.
So at this point in 2024, we're in a weird place with automation. You know, historically AppleScript was the best place to automate, but it only worked on the Mac. Now Apple, of course, is not just the Mac company, it's the iPhone company and kind of the Mac company. And, you know,
right.
And they've got new automation platforms like Shortcuts. There's a lot of people doing stuff with JavaScript. As a developer, and you look at this climate, what are the automation platforms that are interesting to you?
Yeah, it's really interesting because you mentioned AppleScript, and that's really where we started back in the early mid 2000s. We had AppleScript support for our biggest apps, and spent a decent amount of time doing that, and then sort of left it alone. And if people used it, great, and nothing really needed to change too much. But AppleScript sort of withered and pretty much died at this point over the maybe, you know, into the 2010s, 2015 or so. Up till that point, automation was, you know, in a pretty dark place where it was not on the Mac and on Apple's platforms, where it just wasn't well supported. And so something like Shortcuts that's certainly it's certainly the most accessible for users. AppleScript was always supposed to be very accessible. And unfortunately, though it was natural language, it was still pretty hard to use. And so we found not a whole lot of uptake with it. We liked having that support as, you know, sort of what I call a true blue Mac app, has, you know, proper Windows and, you know, it works the way that it should on the Mac. And part of that for a long time was AppleScript support. But more recently, having Shortcut support, I think, has supplanted that and is a lot more accessible to a lot more people. So Shortcut support is definitely the thing, sort of we've sort of done this in stages with our apps. They're not all automatable and they don't all have super high level automation support, but we're adding Shortcuts support to more of them. And then on top of that, especially in Audio Hijack, we've done JavaScript scripting and Unix scripting as well. So, you know, OS X is based on Unix and has been for 20, 25 years now. And Unix scripting is evergreen. That hasn't changed it hasn't changed in decades, and it doesn't need to because it's very powerful. So it's something where it's a good sort of base layer, almost like assembly language in terms of programming. It's a good low-level way to do things. And so we've opened up access to do some stuff from the command line, on top of JavaScript, and then Shortcuts on top of that. So yeah, we sort of look at this in different ways for different apps and see what makes sense for each app. Like the JavaScript and the Unix scripting that I'm talking about is I think exclusive to Audio Hijack because that's where it's been the most useful. But Shortcuts is in Audio Hijack, it's in SoundSource, it's in Farrago, our soundboard app, and probably in more apps in the future because that is so much more accessible to people.
Could you summarize for the listeners? Because, you know, a lot of our listeners are automation enthusiasts, but not necessarily programmers. But Apple's kind of taken you guys, you developers, on a journey in terms of shortcuts integration. Can you just talk through kind of the various phases we've been through and where we are now?
Yeah, well, it's just in terms of shortcuts or in terms of all automation?
Well, let's focus on shortcuts. And I think that's one that a lot of people are interested in. And I guess the point I'm making, I'm just to kind of cheat and tell everybody, it feels to me like it's been hard for developers because Apple's changed the narrative a bit on how to implement them. And like time you put in on this 3 years ago is probably not that valuable at this point. And you've got to kind of, it seems like every couple of years they change the integration with shortcuts.
For us, it's something where for a long time we have sort of taken it slow with any new thing that Apple does. And I don't know how much, you know, if listeners have looked at apps over the years and seen things like the Apple Design Awards. The Apple Design Awards often have a category for whatever the new technology that Apple is pushing is. So it'll be, you know, best new app written in Swift or best shortcut support in an app the very first year that they, you know, they announced shortcut support. And that's great. It gets you great publicity. And there are developers out there who, you know, move quickly and implement this stuff right away. And for us, that has never been the way we've done it. And it's something where we've, as I said, we've taken it slow and sort of waited for these things to shake out and see, okay, this is what they're actually going to support long term. And this is, you know, something that got yanked out of there. And good thing we didn't spend, you know, 3 months implementing that because it would no longer work, as you said. So for us, we sort of waited a little while on a lot of technologies, but on shortcut support until it had shaken out a little more and gotten to a point where we were comfortable implementing it. So I don't know that we have had the experience of needing to re-implement too much of it, but it is certainly something that we see both with that and with a lot of technologies that Apple introduces.
Well, I'd like to brag about one of your implementations because I love what you guys have done with SoundSource. So just for the audience who aren't familiar with this app, it's a Mac app. It works out of your menu bar. And it is the sound controller that Apple's Control Center should have had, honestly, in my opinion. You know, it's like it gives you minute and granular control over all the way audio comes in and out of your device. And I've been a fan of the app for a long time, but I needed to do something in shortcuts and automation. I make like these what I call setup automations. Where I, like, if I'm going to podcast, I want to clear the screen and put the recording app on. And I thought, I wonder if I could also tell it which microphone to listen to and which headphones to point at. And because I tried this in the past and it never worked. And I just took a look and I didn't even think of SoundSource, but SoundSource is all that stuff. You guys went nuts with shortcut support in that app. And as an automator and a maker of the Automators podcast, thank you on this one, man. You guys went above and beyond there.
Well, I've got a big grin on my face because that is one where, as you said, we went a little nuts. And SoundSource is designed to provide you control over audio on your Mac. So as you said, adjusting audio devices, adjusting audio from specific applications. But if SoundSource is not doing anything for you, you can still use its shortcut support to do things like you just said, change what is the input device right now, change what is the output device. Automating audio stuff on your computer, even if you're not really using SoundSource to do anything else. And that was something that, you know, we implemented this and we said, all right, this is really cool. And it's a little hard to advertise because we're basically saying, hey, even if you don't think you need any of the stuff that SoundSource itself does, if you're trying to automate anything, that's another reason to use this app. Because it will provide you with those hooks to make those changes that you're describing and many others. And it's for most people, I think it's probably just a little bonus of using SoundSource. But hopefully we can find some people who, you know, wouldn't otherwise check out SoundSource and say, oh, wait a minute, you just made a whole big chunk of the Mac, you know, the Mac's audio system scriptable, automatable. And that's actually really useful, even if I'm not focused on the other things that SoundSource can do.
Yeah. And so I'm talking to you, Automators audience. If you want control in shortcuts over audio, there's a get SoundSource. I mean, I have bot apps for their shortcut supports. I already had bot SoundSource. So it was icing on the cake for me. But I think for us automators, we need to share the story. And this is a good one. Thanks for doing that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. One of the things that I use the shortcuts actions from SoundSource to do is, as part of various different setups, I use Moom to put certain applications on certain displays, depending on what I'm doing. And one of my work setups does involve having Infuse open to play some videos or whatever from my local machine while I am doing other work. But specifically, I put Infuse over on my studio display monitor, which is my secondary monitor. I have a 34-inch ultra-wide as my main. And one of the things that I do is I also use SoundSource to set the audio output for Infuse to the studio display speakers so that it's coming out of the speakers that the picture is on.
Work. Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah, and I love the fact that you can redirect specific application audio to certain speakers through shortcuts, as well as just say, hey, I want my output to go to these speakers. Because usually what I'll do is I'll say, hey, I want general output to be going to these speakers now, but I want this application to be going to those speakers over there instead. And that honestly makes a world of difference for me. And also, yeah, being able to deal with the sound effects as a thing, because sound effects going to the same speaker as everything else sometimes is exactly what I want and sometimes is not what I want.
And sometimes it's maddening because it's loud as heck. And yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. So I love the fact that I can control all of that with shortcuts as part of this. So thank you for adding that, because I do really appreciate it.
I will definitely pass this along to Nathan, who's the lead developer on SoundSource, and he is probably, within the company, he's probably the person most interested to jump on a new technology. By the time we got to shortcuts, it wasn't brand new anymore, but it was definitely his doing that we had so much support for, you know, almost, I think there's like 24 actions in there that we can do. So absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, as someone who records audio, it's maddening that the Mac often, without you realizing it, decides that even though you have all your audio pointed at your headphones, that it's just going to do all sound effects through the speakers, because why not, you know? and getting to that control is not easy. A sound source just puts it right in front of you. And yeah, I always, you know, wonder, like, when you see something like this, how come Apple doesn't spend more time, you know, on their controls, because this is you guys, I'm sure there's a lot of audio programming involved with this because you're rerouting. But there's also a delightful bit of user interface here that the vendor didn't do. Like, you know, Apple didn't make it nice like this. And just, well, you know, I guess it gives you a market.
I was going to say, don't talk them into it.
Exactly.
It's a huge platform, and it's a huge, how many platforms do they have now? You know, half dozen platforms. So it's even as big a company as they are, there's hopefully always going to be places where third parties like us can step in and say, okay, you know, the base level is good enough to ship, but we can hopefully make something that's better and that helps some people. Over time we have to sort of adapt and see where those openings get sealed up. But for now, SoundSource is hopefully doing things that they're not doing that are useful for people. So
yeah, and that's always my favorite apps. It's the developers who will take weeks and months and sometimes years making something really good that just doesn't get the attention at the fruit company, right? You know, they're just never going to stop and think about this sound problem in the way you guys do and constantly revisit. You know, it just doesn't happen. And that's nice. This episode of The Automators is brought to you by Screencasts Online. Get the most out of your Apple devices and save 20% on your plan. Just go to screencastsonline.com/automators. We love our Apple devices for their innovation and style, but it can be hard to keep up with the ever-evolving world of apps and services. Screencasts Online is on hand to help. They've been providing video tutorials for 19 years, so you can unlock the full potential of your Apple hardware. Screencasts Online is for everyone, regardless of skill level. Each tutorial is designed for maximum learning in minimal time. So stop struggling with unfamiliar programs and unlock access to all their existing content, from new releases to old favorites, all without breaking a sweat. So how does it work? Each week, Screencasts Online publishes a 30 to 40 minute Apple-related video tutorial, as well as a shorter 10 to 15 minute tip video, that gets added to its ever-expanding library of over 1,300 tutorials. As a member, you have access to the whole archive, which you can access through the Screencast Online website or through their dedicated Mac and iOS app, or sit back and watch on your Apple TV. You'll also get access to all issues of their monthly digital magazine, which is filled with content that helps you learn more about all aspects related to your device, with original articles from contributors like Don McAllister, Allison Sheridan, and even myself. So if you want to improve your skills with macOS, iOS, iPadOS, or watchOS, and with applications like Alfred, OmniFocus, Hazel, DevonThink, GoodNotes, TextExpander, Airtable, and more, and soon VisionOS and Apple Intelligence as well, then a subscription to Screencast Online is for you. And as an Automators listener, you can get 20% off of a monthly, quarterly, or annual subscription. The discount will be applied at each renewal for as long as your subscription is active. Go to screencastsonline.com/automators and choose your plan. Once again, that's screencastsonline.com/automators to get 20% off your plan and get access to the whole library. With so many hardware and software updates coming, there's never been a better time to join Screencast Online. And our thanks to Screencast Online for their support of the Automators and all of Relay FM. This isn't the only app, though. I don't know how to pronounce. Is it Farago? I never know how to pronounce
Farago. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you've got shortcuts in Farago as well.
Yep. So that's our, as I mentioned earlier, that's our soundboard app. And that's sort of a, natural place to have some automation because people often hook up external controllers. So Stream Deck is a really popular one, but MIDI, any sort of MIDI device, OSC is another way to control things. So OSC, Stream Deck, MIDI support. That app has support for a whole bunch of controllers. That's another one where Nathan, our sort of most technophile developer, did a lot of that work. And so it's something where, you know, if you hit a button on your physical hardware, then you can cause a sound to play or cause a set of sounds to play. And it's something where, it was a natural fit for automation, not full automation. You know, we mentioned timers earlier where, you know, that's, you walk away from the computer and it does what you want. And when you come back, it's done. This is more of the sort where, you know, you hit one button and two or three or five or 10 things happen that you wanted to happen in succession. And that to me is really, it feels really visceral when you can hit one button and a whole bunch of actions occur. That to me feels like you've really saved a lot of time, saved a lot of energy. And that was a sort of a really natural fit for Farago.
Yeah. I think you guys are really smart to also explore Stream Deck as an audio company and someone who works with audio. Stream Decks are hugely important, but it also is a crossover device for us automators. It just makes so much sense for Rogue Amoeba to be playing in that space.
Yeah, that's one where we saw a decent amount of users who said, "Oh, I have this." You know, this. If people don't know, a Stream Deck is a little keyboard with really nice little keys that can have pictures in them, LCD keys. And you can use it to do just about anything on your computer, but as the name implies, it's often used by streamers, people doing video and audio.
Yeah, if there's one podcast, Paul, you can go on that people are going to know what Stream Deck is.
Yeah, it's the Automators. That's right. Of course. but yeah, so it was something for us where people came to us and they said, you know, I'm using this thing and I've already got a button to do X and Y and Z, and I want it to do stuff in your apps. As you said, it was sort of a natural fit where there's sort of a crossover of audio and automation, and it worked out really well. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really glad you guys are doing that. What's next for automation? If you want to talk about it, I don't like to put you on the spot, but as you look at, you know, the current state of automation in your apps, is there directions that you're interested in pursuing without committing to anything?
that's the key. Yeah. Without committing to anything.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing is getting more shortcut support across our apps, because I think right now we've got three that are shipping with it, and we've got one that we're working on. We've got seven products and about half of them have some shortcut support. And that's something where I think we can pretty easily get a nice little gain there where it's not a ton of work to add that support. And then we can see what users do with it. So that's probably the very simplest thing I would say. And then Tied to that, I'd also say, you know, we were just talking about the Stream Deck. That's something that is well supported in Virago, but there are other apps where that could be used, Audio Hijack among them. And we're not currently doing anything there, but it's something where, you know, it's certainly on our mind. We now have these devices to test with, and that makes it much easier to say, you know what, hey, why don't we spend a day and fiddle with this and see, you know, what can we do to integrate this a little bit better. So I think for us, there's not any huge change where we say, oh, you know, 6 months from now, X, this will be a massive thing. I think it's much more a slow sort of steady crawl or walk towards more automation options throughout all of the apps. You know, just a few minutes ago, we were talking, I was saying that there was this dark period where AppleScript was pretty much dead and nothing had replaced it. And it seemed, I don't know how much you've talked about it on the show over the years, but it seemed to me like that Apple didn't really care that much about automation until they bought Workflowy and turned it into Shortcuts and then brought that to the Mac. That really sort of revitalized things. And it certainly revitalized things for us where we said, oh, you know what, this shows us that Apple cares. It shows us that they are interested in supporting this sort of automation. And users have always cared, but when there just wasn't a good way to do it, then there wasn't a good way to do it. But when the underpinnings are put back into the OS with Shortcuts, it's something where I feel, you know, I feel good about it for the future. I feel like there's a good future for this, and Apple has put a pretty user accessible face on this, and we can extend that with our own apps.
Yeah, I mean the problem with AppleScript was always that it was too friendly for developers and not friendly enough for normal users.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
And they really picked a horse here. Shortcuts is user friendly.
Yeah. And I think we saw a lot of that at WWDC because they were saying, you know, that, you know, everything is app intents now, and app intents are what powers and drives Shortcuts. So, you know, not everything is an app intent. You know, if you say everything's an app intent, you end up with three raccoons in a trench coat pretending to be app intents. But, you know, they're clearly trying to channel people in a particular direction. And we're seeing that, especially on like the iPhone, where the control center new actions that developers can support are also action button actions, and they're Shortcuts actions. And the fact that they're really building all of these things together, and we've seen it year after year, you know, there's something that's available in Shortcuts. They add a new action and people do things with it. And then Apple go, oh, that's an idea. And the next year it magically appears in the operating system. Like the classic one for me is changing your background and your Apple Watch face with your focus mode, because they added focus mode triggers. People went and did that manually. And the next year Apple were like, we've put it into focus modes for you. And I feel like that is just such a brilliant way of, you know, really actually finding out what people want, because the other thing is by jumping on bandwagons too early, you can end up, you know, producing, you know, some automation solutions or, you know, whatever it is that, you know, doesn't really work the way that you would like it to. And then you're just stuck with supporting it because, you know, you've got people who are really, really using it. And you've got a choice between making users really unhappy by taking something away that they're using, or supporting something that's really difficult for you to keep working on, where if you'd had a little bit more time to think about it, maybe you'd have come up with a better way of doing it that's, you know, nice for you to maintain, but also easier for more people to use. And I feel like you are definitely on the right end of the wait and see approach, because it's so easy to just be like, oh, here's a new shiny thing. And everyone's like, yay, shiny thing. And then you're like, oh no, it's a very shiny thing that also happens to be a bug magnet. Dun, dun, dun. So yeah, I think you've picked the right sort of horses to back there.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, certainly, you know, as I said, if I could snap my fingers and make this all work instantly, I would sure as heck do it. But it's something where we're a small company and we need to focus on the things we can do well for our users, rather than having, as you said, 10 shiny new things and half of them don't work right, or, you know, they're buggy, or, you know, we need to remove some of them. We definitely want to take it a little slower than that and provide people with things over time that get more and more useful.
This episode of Automators is brought to you by Scriptrunner for Jira. It feels so great when you automate something that makes your work life easier. Scriptrunner is the leading automation and customization app that's changing the game for Jira admins everywhere, available both on cloud and data center. You can say goodbye to repetitive tasks with its unlimited automation, gain more control over your Jira fields with conditional logic, and build workflows that mirror your processes perfectly. You know how once you automate something, you wonder how you ever lived without it before? ScriptRunner is that. And ScriptRunner is offering an exclusive deal. Get 6 months free for ScriptRunner for Jira Cloud. Just click the link in our show notes. Try it now. And if you want your company to try it, don't forget to let your Jira admin or IT manager know. Click the link in the show notes to get 6 months free for ScriptRunner for Jira Cloud. Our thanks to ScriptRunner for Jira for their support of this show and Relay FM.
Paul, in addition to being a running a software company, you're a bit of a power user yourself. What are some of your automations?
Yeah, I was thinking about this before we talked, and I've got sort of a weird assemblage of various automations. I definitely would not think of myself as a hardcore automator, but there are definitely, you know, multiple things on my Mac that if I stop and think about it, I say, oh, wait a minute, that is just automation. So an obvious one is just nightly backups that I have automated. So I've got Super Duper running on my computer, and it backs up all my data. And I set that up years ago. I check on it once in a while. It's always working great. And you know, that's an automation that I almost never think about because it just works, and that's perfect. And I've got things like I've got a title case script where I do a decent amount of writing, and I want for headlines, I want title case. And I can highlight some text and hit, God, I can't even remember. I think it's Shift Command T on my computer. You know, and it runs a shortcut. It runs a script, actually a shell script, that takes that and applies title case to that text and spits it back out. And then something I just mentioned is custom keyboard shortcuts on my computer. So like adjusting the keyboard shortcuts to do things like that, where you know, it's, I could run that script manually if I just opened it up, fed it some text, and pulled it back out. But adding a custom keyboard shortcut to it makes it literally three buttons to press, and then suddenly it's running for me.
On that one, so are you making the keyboard shortcuts with a third-party app, or are you just doing it in the native keyboard system settings?
So I was doing it, I need to find the name of the tool. I was doing it just in the native keyboard settings, which a lot of people don't know about, and probably on this show more people know about, but it's definitely a very powerful thing, very powerful part of macOS that is, I don't know how Apple could advertise it better, but it's certainly something, throw it in the tips app or something like that, because the ability to change your keyboard shortcuts and to make new keyboard shortcuts that run things like scripts makes it very easy to do powerful things with just a button press. Yeah. But actually, a couple of years ago, I found an app called Custom Shortcuts. I was just looking at my computer to find it. And that sort of gives you a little bit more of a UI, a better UI than what's in the keyboard system setting, is I'm pretty sure where the manual, you know, the OS-based changes are. So yeah, you can do it. You can certainly do it from system settings, or you can do it from an app like Custom Shortcuts.
Where is that is that in the App Store, or is that a third-party app?
No, I'm looking at it right now. It's by Hudasoft, which they have a few different Mac apps, and I think this one's free. And I'm looking, I'm poking at their website as we talk. It's just a free download, and it's just a nice little thing that that makes this a little. It's basically just a prettier front end for what's in the system settings. I almost call them the system preferences because I'm still 3 years out of date on that, but it's just a prettier front end for that, but it's free and it's worth checking out. Yeah.
Yeah. You even have a link to this software in your support center as a side note under adding custom keyboard shortcuts. So I'll link to that document as well, because that'll be useful for folks who are looking just for the general Mac tip, as well as the custom shortcuts app by Huda Software.
I don't know how I never knew about this app. I'm going to have to check this out. Huda Software, by the way, is another just like great Mac developer, small company. I remember years ago meeting the primary developer at Macworld, and he's from outside the United States, so he brought his dad with him. He was there with his dad at his booth. Just the nicest guy. And they've made some really great software over the years.
So speaking of great software, there is one app that I do want to mention. It's by a friend of mine, Gus Mueller, who runs Flying Meat Software, and that's RetroBatch, which I imagine you are very familiar with, but that is one that it's funny because I almost never open the actual app itself. I have a bunch of actions, RetroBatch, you know, just doing image adjustments for me. And I just have these droplets that I drop an image on and I get back the image that I need and I'm all set. And it's this strange thing where I have this affinity for a piece of software that I almost never directly open. It's just doing a whole bunch of work for me behind the scenes, which I really appreciate.
I love this user interface, and I'm not familiar. You have to tell me what came first, RetroBatch or Audio Hijack, because they've got the same look.
Right. So Audio Hijack 3 was the first. It was the first of our apps, and it was the first major app that had sort of a block based interface where there's a pipeline of what changes are going to happen. So we have a block that brings in your microphone, and we have a block that adjusts it with a 10-band equalizer, and then we have a block that sends it to a file, records it to a file. So then you have this pipeline where the audio flows through and it gets impacted by all these blocks. And RetroBatch definitely, as I said, Gus is a friend of mine, and he took liberal inspiration from Audio Hijack, and we were happy to have him do so, and definitely talked to him a decent amount about, you know, how this all worked and what made sense from sort of an interface perspective. So it's definitely it is inspired by Audio Hijack, but he then applied it to a very different problem space of, you know, image manipulation, and it worked really well for that as well. And I think if you look at RetroBatch if you actually open the app, which as I said, I don't do that often. If you run a workflow in the upper left, in the left corner of the little status screen there, there are a whole bunch of little like 16 by 16 pixel images. And one of them is, you know, just like a little running animation indicator. But one of them is actually Rogue Amoeba's old logo as sort of a nod to the inspiration from Audio Hijack.
That is awesome.
Yeah, I'm just a huge fan of like the pipes style, you know, automation.
I mean, Shortcuts does it too.
Yeah,
I don't think people realize this, but in Shortcuts, if there is a, and it's a little difficult to see, but obviously you've got the blocks and it just goes from top to bottom. There's no branching or anything like there is in Audio Hijack or RetroBatch, but there is a line often between actions. And that line is essentially, this is outputting something and that is going into this next one. It doesn't have any of the details on it that you might hope for in say SoundSource or SoundSource is a bad example, Audio Hijack. But you know, it does, you know, the line does actually mean something if it's there or not there, which is you know, I'm gonna say that they took inspiration from you as well, because I'm sure they did, because you know, it's a great great example to crib from, isn't it?
I should be clear. So that's you know, as you said, that's like a vertical pipeline, just top to bottom. Audio Hijack itself took inspiration from another Apple application called Quartz Composer, which was part of Xcode. And so if people look that up, they can sort of see that, oh yeah, there's blocks that then it's sort of a pipeline. So it's certainly, I don't want to say we had this idea originally and nobody else had done it, but to answer David's question, Audio Hijack did come before RetroBatch, and RetroBatch took a little bit of inspiration from it, but then put its own spin on it. And again, it's not, you know, we don't own this interface paradigm. It's something that I'm glad to see used in other apps, because I think to your point, it's very clear what's happening. When you have a pipeline like that, you can see, okay, it's going to do A, then B, then C, or if it's going to branch, it's going to do both of these things at once. And I think it's a really, especially for audio and even for images like in RetroBatch, where you're not actually seeing the image get manipulated directly in front of you. Basically, anything that's happening sort of invisibly or in the background, it's nice to have some sort of a visual that tells you, okay, yes, this is what's actually happening. I can understand the flow of things.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is something that's very important, especially when you're looking at any kind of automation interface, or, you know, just, you know, you've got data going in a bunch of places. The number of times that I will be trying to plan a project and I'll end up pulling out something like Task Heat, because I can do something similar in that with, you know, the visual flow of, you know, this comes first and then this happens and then that happens and so on. And once I've done this, that enables these 15 other things. But until I've done that, I can't do these. You know, it is such a useful interface to have. So I think
absolutely
that is just a really great approach.
Yeah, one of the things I like about the way you implement it in Audio Hijack is that it live updates the pipes, and because you can have, you know, they can diverge and converge. When I start messing around with an automation in Audio Hijack, it immediately tells me if I just like rerouted audio someplace I didn't want to. And that's nice.
Yeah, it's something where, so audio, the original Audio Hijack from 22 years ago was, it basically had a little bit of a top to bottom flow, but it was not obvious. It was not an obvious pipeline. And Audio Hijack Pro, which was the main app we had for about 12 or 13 years, the interface of it was not, it was not ideal. You know, the functionality was there, the recording of any audio was there, but it really was when Audio Hijack 3 came out in 2015. That was the first one that had these blocks, and I think it really was revelatory for a lot of people to say, oh, you know what, this makes a lot more sense because I can see it right in front of me. And it's just a lot more obvious what's going to happen. And that was helpful for our users and therefore helpful for us in terms of just making this more accessible to people.
Have you explored a home automation at all?
I have. I've certainly been frustrated by home automation, as I think almost anyone who's done much with it has been. I've got... Ooh, I'm like walking through my house mentally. I've got a front door lock that's quote smart. I've got a garage door opener that's smart. Some lights. I mean, the stuff I'm doing there is pretty rudimentary. I think it's pretty interesting what you can do now based on just adding a couple variables. So when I was younger, when we were all younger, we or our parents had timed outlets, right? You had those timed outlets where you could plug a lamp in. And when you went on vacation, you'd set it to turn on the light from 6 p.m. until 11 p.m. so that no one would know that you were away from home.
Yeah.
And now you can do a whole lot more because your house can know whether or not you're away from home based on the presence of your cell phone. So I don't have to set this up every time I take a trip. When I leave the house, if I'm gone for a couple of days, it knows, oh, nobody's home right now. So I'm going to turn on this light and this light. And I can set it to be a little more dynamic where, you know, it'll turn on one light for a couple hours and then another for another couple hours and then the bedroom and then turn that one off last and just make it look a little more convincing, I think, without needing to have 3 or 5 or 10 of those physical switches, physical outlets that have that timing. So that to me is one that it's interesting just because of the added variable of your phone basically tells the house, is this person home or not? I know that there's other ones that like my front door lock could just detect when I'm coming home. It could unlock itself, but I live in the city. And so I'm relatively near my house without actually being at my house. And so I think I like my mom's house where she's a little bit more rural. And if she's within 200 feet of her house, she's home and no one else will be within 200 feet of her house. So it'd be okay if it just unlocked then. But I haven't gone that far because it doesn't really fit with the way that I use it. But I'm always interested to do more with this because it's nice. It's nice to be able to just, you know, I'm riding my bike and I say, oh, open the garage door, and I don't have to carry a garage door opener with me. And that works. But as I said, I found it to be not as reliable as I would like. And I'm hoping that any year now, Thread and Matter are going to be the way that these things are powered, and it'll be a lot more useful for automation. But right now it's good, but not as good as it should be, I think.
Yeah, because Apple announced at WWDC the nearby or express mode, I think it is called, for iOS 18 for HomeKit locks, which will need to have, I think, a U1 chip in them. But essentially, if you get within 6 feet of your front door, then it can automatically unlock. And to me, 6 feet is probably about the right range because even if I'm the only person around within 200 feet, I'm still pretty far away from the house.
Right.
I know sometimes if I unlock my front door from while I'm sitting in my car, by the time I've got out of my car, grabbed my bags out of the boot, and then made it to the front door, My locks automatically relock.
Relocking, that
is not something, it's not something that I can change. It's built into the hardware. Yale decided, no, if you unlock it and it's been unlocked for 30 seconds and you haven't touched the handle, we're locking this again.
Oh, wow.
Because clearly you didn't mean to do it, which is a great safety feature. I do actually really like it. But if it could be like 45 seconds, that would be so much better for me. So as it is, I'm working on adding a little delay into the button that I push in the car because it's a virtual button. So theoretically, I can just say, hey, wait 10 seconds and then call this. I just haven't got around to it yet. But yeah, it's just one of those things where we're going to have to wait and see what happens there. But I think things are definitely improving a lot. And the fact that Matter is a standard where everybody is working together, Apple and Google and Amazon and everybody else, is, you know, it's going to be a good step forward in getting more hardware that actually works in
works
a standardized
properly, yeah.
way. Yeah.
Well, I think it's really interesting, and I'm sure, you know, I know you've covered it on the show plenty, but I think it's one of the most obvious automation use cases is sort of home automation, because everyone lives somewhere, obviously, and they all have some lights and they all have a front door and they all have, you know, these things that you're dealing with constantly. And to be able to automate that just a little bit, I could explain it's terrible, but my mom is really my example for, you know, she's technical enough, but she's not super technical. So I'm not just using your mom, I'm literally using my mother. And I could explain to her, hey, you know, wouldn't it be nice if your lights could turn on and off when you went on vacation? And here's how we can set that up with, you know, at this point, like $30 worth of hardware and then the Apple TV that she already has, and that'll work automatically. Whereas if I tried to explain, oh, you can automate Audio Hijack to do these various things, that would be beyond, she could probably understand it, but it'd be beyond anything that she was interested in. I think home automation is sort of the entry point that makes sense for just about everybody compared to any other sort of automation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something that's a lot easier to understand.
And when you were saying earlier, you know, that it's supposed to get better anytime, I actually think it is probably going to get better. There's like one of the new kind of technologies emerging is these human presence sensors, because mm-hmm. infrared, it was never really the right sensor to detect if someone's in the room. If you sit still in the room long enough, it thinks you left. And
right.
So they're coming out with new types of sensors that actually detect if a human is in the room and where they're in the room. And as that stuff gets nailed down and cheaper, you know, a lot of the home automation stuff, like turn the lights on when I come in and turn them when I leave reliably, I think that stuff is going to get solved here pretty soon. I sure hope so.
Yeah, I'm certainly interested to see it in the future. Absolutely.
Okay, well, Paul, thanks so much for coming on, and congratulations with all the success at Rogue Amoeba. For you automators out there that want to automate anything with audio, definitely go out to Rogue Amoeba and check it out. SoundSource would be the one I'd tell you to get first. Man, that is so useful for me, having all those shortcuts actions. But go check it out. We'll put links in the show notes for it. If you would like to get the ad-free extended version of the show, today we're going to be talking to Paul about Apple Intelligence and WWDC reactions. You can sign up for that over at relay.fm/automators. Thank you to our sponsors today, and that's our friends over at Screencast Online, new sponsor. Thanks for coming on board, Screencast Online, and ScriptRunner for Jira. We'll see you next time.
Goodbye, folks.
Bye-bye.